Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio, and this is going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
You know, it's always good when there's the same amount of handlers as there are guests.
It's always that's good. Yes.
Remember last week,
we had no handlers. Yeah, I know. That threw us.
Didn't know what to do.
Right.
Well, first up on High Velocity Radio, we got Chris Vaughn, and she is the Executive Director of Georgia Forward. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
For the two people who don't know what you guys are up to, why don't you share a little bit about Georgia Forward?
I would love to. Georgia Forward is a statewide nonpartisan nonprofit working to strengthen communities, unite our state, and create a talent pipeline within Georgia.
A talent pipeline.
That's
How's
right.
that going?
It's actually going really well. Our leadership action program, Young Game Changers, has over 300 alumni, so we are identifying and developing leaders across the state in a variety of professional sectors.
Well, on shows here throughout the day, every day of the week, Katie, you'll vouch for me, talent comes up. Everybody is looking for talent. They are hungry for talent. How did this come about where you guys said, you know what, we want to be a solution to the talent challenge?
Well, we were founded in 2010, really with the concept to unite the state and combat the idea of two Georgias, being Atlanta and everyone else. Mm-hmm. And we got started hosting forums that brought statewide thought leaders together to talk about different challenges that faced our state. And in 2012, we started this leadership program, Young Game Changers, and it has been extremely successful. We've completed 7 programs around the state. And we are getting ready to start our 8th one next year in 2019. And we continue our forums. And talking about talent, our forum next month is all about engaging Georgia's next generation of leaders. Because communities across the state have different challenges to developing leaders. Some communities don't have a lot of young people that have either stayed or come back or moved there. And some communities have so many young people that want to get involved, there's just not enough seats at the table. So we're excited to have this conversation next month at the Georgia Forward Forum.
So now for the game changers, are the kids, like, how old are they? Are they in high school, college?
They are emerging leaders, so they are between the ages of 24 and 40.
Okay, so they're older, so they've already in the workforce a little bit.
Yes, absolutely.
And then do they raise their hand or someone nominates them? How do they get involved in the
it's
program?
It's an application process. So our 2019 Young Game Changers program is going to focus on Monroe-Walton County, which is outside of Athens. And we're taking applications now for people that want to be a part of this program. The qualifications are that you are between the ages of 24 and 40. You are from any professional sector from anywhere in the state of Georgia. So a third of our participants in the 2019 class will be from the Metro Atlanta area. A third will be from the Monroe community, and a third from Greater Georgia. You can apply online at georgiaforward.org.
And then all those people, they get together for a project within Monroe County? Is that what happens?
Well, it's Monroe, Georgia, Walton County.
Monroe, Georgia.
Not to be confused with Monroe County,
exactly.
Where I live. But we will meet 5 times over the course of 8 months in 2019.
In person. This is not virtual online. This is...
Well, it's a little bit of both, but there are 4 in-person meetings, a 2-day opening session in January, 2 days in March, a day in June, and you make final recommendations to the community in August.
It's to solve a problem or a challenge?
Absolutely. So we identify 4 challenges within the Monroe-Walton County community, and we task the Young Game Changers with coming up with really big creative solutions to those problems that would work in that community. So it is very much a leadership action program. There's a lot of work that goes into it.
It's not theory. This is like this. We need this to actually practically work.
Exactly. And in every community, well, we've just announced our recommendations in Albany, which was the 2018 community. Mm-hmm. In every community prior to that, who've had time to work on any of the issues, every community has implemented at least one of the recommendations that our group has made, if not more. Some communities are using it as a checklist of what they're doing in their community. So a track record of success with the Young Game Changers program, and we are using this to strengthen the community that we're in, but also build bridges throughout the state and create this talent pipeline within Georgia.
Now, can you share some of the examples from the past that were suggestions and that were implemented?
Absolutely. So in 2014, we worked in Dublin, Lawrence County, and some of the recommendations that we made there that they have been implementing, they're building a river walk along the Oconee River. They have put a Institute of Higher Learning in their downtown, and they have also worked on gateways that we identified as entrances into their downtown. And one of them, the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Gateway Monument Park, they took that idea and ran with it. They partnered with all different organizations and businesses in the community to make this such a success. And now this gateway and this monument park is on the Civil Rights Trail for the state of Georgia and has gotten some national attention.
So now, how does it work? So you you gather these young people, and then is there adult supervision? There's somebody that's leading this, or are they just given kind of a blank sheet of paper and say, go ahead and check back in when you're done?
There's definitely structure to the program. We have two Game Changer alumni that continue to work with our program. One is Carrie Barnes with Georgia EMC. She's a community development specialist. And Kat Canella, who's the former assistant director of Columbus State University. And they both help with the facilitation of the program. There's structure and guidelines, but there's not a lot of hand-holding. So you are tasked with a challenge. You are given the resources that you need to go out and accomplish that and report back throughout the eight-month process.
And then at the end, there's a master report that covers all of the what their recommendations
yes,
are.
Yes, the final recommendations are made to the community at the end of the program. So there's four challenge questions, and each one has three big ideas, complete with an action timeline, a potential budget, a proposed budget, potential funding sources, measures of success, and expected impact. And you can find all seven of our completed reports online at georgiaforward.org.
Now, how do businesses get involved in this kind of work?
Well, there's kind of, when we talk about businesses being involved with Georgia Forward, there's kind of two buckets that we talk about. One are the businesses and entities in the community that we're working in for Young Game Changers who want to support the program because of the work they're doing in that community. And we do partner with a steering committee in the local community where the Game Changers program will be to do our fundraising and support for the program. And then there's those companies and businesses that really are statewide and they care about Georgia as a whole, and it doesn't matter what corner of Georgia you're working in, but they want to support the work that is done on a statewide basis. And so we have those foundation supporters as well.
So now at the forum, what's going to happen at that event?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked. So the 2018 Georgia Forward Forum is going to be on Wednesday, October the 10th at Georgia Farm Bureau in Macon. And we're really excited about this day. It'll be a one-day event where we'll bring statewide thought leaders from all across Georgia, from all different professions and all different ages, together to talk about the challenges and opportunities around engaging young people. And this is really about community leadership, but I think that the ideas that come out of this can be applied to different businesses and different types of entities that are looking for leadership development. But we are really excited. Our opening keynote is going to be from Kathy Cox, who is the current dean of Mercer Law School in mm-hmm. Macon. And she's going to talk about different challenges and opportunities that she's overcome and her successful ladder for her career. We're going to have panelists from all over the state that also talk about challenges and opportunities that they see in different communities because, again, the size of your community and where you are in the state, you might have different challenges than others. We're also going to have several collaborative sessions where you don't just come to hear what our speakers and panelists have to say, but there's going to be an opportunity for you to participate and to come up with some solutions as well, because we're also going to be talking about creative ways to engage young people.
Now, is this where the next kind of cohort launches, or you recap the previous one?
We'll be talking about Young Game Changers some at the forum, but this is a different event. So we will have Young Game Changer alumni that are there, and hopefully some people that are there are interested in being in the next Young Game Changers class.
Yeah, so who attends? It's open to anybody?
It's open to anyone, and we've had people from farmers to IT experts to people that work in higher education or in community development, people from foundations and nonprofits. Really, Georgia Forward has found that our greatest success comes when we have the most diverse group of people together. And that diversity comes from where they're from in the state, how old they are, male or female, what their profession is, what their background is. And it's really interesting as we kind of track where people come from. You know, a lot of times they are born in this community, used to work in that community, and they've moved around a lot. Sure. So they've been able to experience the different assets in different parts of our state. But we really feel that the more diverse the group, the better, because that's where our creativity really comes.
Now, any kind of inside tips for somebody that wants to be a young game changer? Like, what is it better if they're an entrepreneur? Is it better if they work in corporate, if they're a nonprofit, work for the government?
It is best if they have a heart for making communities better and making our state better. It really doesn't matter what your background is and doesn't matter what your job is. If you have a passion for making our state better and working with other people that want to do that, then we want you to be a part of our program.
Now, as part of the application, do they have to, is there a portfolio they have to
The application
submit?
Process is very easy. You click the apply button at georgiaforward.org, and there's a questionnaire form that you fill out that's really contact information, things like that. But then you also email in your resume and a cover letter of why you want to be part of the program, along with your headshot. And that's the application process.
So you don't have to have examples of, I worked in my community and made a garden.
Well, you don't have to have that, but in your letter of interest, you know, it's always good to know, like, why you want to be a part of this, because this is work. And you're signing up to work for another community, but really at the end of the day, it's all about the betterment of our state. And it's a lot of really great experience and access to leaders that you can see how communities work, what makes them tick, what their challenges are. I'll never forget one of our game changers who was from Douglas, Georgia, Coffee County, was working on the Douglasville, Douglas County Young Game Changers program. At the end of the program, he said, you know, I really didn't think I would have much to add coming to Atlanta and Metro Atlanta and trying to fix the problem. But I found that a lot of the things that they struggle with are the same things that we struggle with. And we were able to take some best practices from both. And that's really what Georgia Forward's all about, is strengthening communities and uniting our state.
Now, do you have any examples of some of the alumni that were able to leverage being part of this into, like, furthering their career? Or,
yes. We had one woman that worked in one of our programs, and she said she'd always had an interest in economic development, but she worked in a marketing job. And so after Young Game Changers, she said that it really gave her the excitement and the,
confidence
to really step out and apply for a job in economic development. And now she's the marketing director at an economic development authority.
Wow. So now you need more young game changers, right?
We always need more young game changers. We are taking applications now through November 1st.
And then it'll begin in January.
That's right. And all those dates can be found on our website as well. We're also looking for people that want to come be part of our conversation and come up with some creative ways to engage young people around the state as part of the 2018 Georgia Forward Forum.
And then you want people to attend the forum as well.
That's right.
So now, how can business people get involved with this whole initiative?
If business people can get involved by attending our forum, reaching out to me and setting up a meeting where I can come tell you more about what we're doing around the state. We're always up for speaking at civic groups like Rotary and Kiwanis and sharing the message about what we're doing.
Good stuff. So one more time, the website?
Our website is georgiaforward.org.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thanks for having me.
Hang with us. Got one more guest. Next up on High Velocity Radio, we got Joe Guth, and he is with McAllister's Deli. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks, Lee.
Tell us about McAllister. Last time you were here, I think you were with some other organization. You just can't keep a job.
Yes, you know, I'm always moving around.
You got to lean in there, Joe.
So, yes, with McAllister's Deli now for about 6 months, I was with Cinnabon for 4 years. Both brands are owned by Focus Brands,
right,
which is based here in Atlanta. We also have the Schlotzky's Deli brand, Moe's Southwest Grill, Annie Ann's Pretzels, Carvel ice cream, and then as of 2 days ago, Jamba Juice.
Oh, wow. So have you always been in this line of work?
So I've been in food service for quite some time now. Prior to Focus Brands, where I've been about 4 years, was with Yum Brands for several years, managing KFC for the south of the U.S., and then 10 years with the Coca-Cola Company.
Now, when you're in food service and in leadership, what's some of the challenges? Like, why would you have gone from Cinnabon to McAllister? Is that just kind of a lateral move within Focus where they needed help in that area? Like, how does that work?
Well, McAllister's is, even though it's not as well known as Cinnabon, is a much larger business. Mm-hmm. So we'll be approaching about $700 million in system sales. Cinnabon on the franchise side, it will be north of $200 million. So it's a much larger piece of business. For me, it expands my experience.
It was your growth and for you in your career.
Yeah, and one of, if not the largest growth driver for Focus Brands right now.
So now, at McAllister's, how do you attack a job like that? Because now you've got to grow something that's already established and out there, and it's a challenging market right now, isn't it?
It is a challenging market, but I think we're very fortunate at McAllister's. From, you know, different brands I've been with at Coca-Cola, KFC, and Cinnabon, McAllister's is in fantastic shape from an economic standpoint. Our annual unit volume is about 1.7 million. Franchisees make roughly $260,000 a year on the bottom line. That's a publicly disclosed number. So we're probably one of the best brands you've never heard of in many cases. We have 432 locations as of this week. But we are what would be considered more of a super regional brand with the potential to become a very big national player. So you asked me around the challenges. You know, the challenges are continuing to find great franchisees. We have the numbers and the brand and the performance and track record, almost 30 years, that would shore up why you would want to invest in a brand like McAllister's and be associated with us. I think our greatest challenge is finding more of those great franchisees.
And then what's the profile of a good McAllister franchisee?
Primarily what we're looking for is someone who has prior multi-unit food service experience. Given the profile of our brand, it's definitely one where we think we're looking for more experienced operators. And so that has been they're definitely out there.
Are they right now owning other brands and then they just want to add this to their portfolio?
In some cases, yes. In many cases, at least for new franchisees where we're looking for. We do have several large franchisees that are solely dedicated to the McAllister's brand, and we're very fortunate to have them.
Now, do you do McAllister-centric events where you all get together and share best practices?
Yes, we do. We, as Focus Brands, we actually get together every 2 years on a global level because we do have an international presence in
several brands.
So all
of the brands get together?
Yes.
Wow, every that must 2 years. Some party.
Yes, it's quite the event. And then in those off years, yes, we get together as a brand. We'll be getting together this spring with all of our franchisees and their management.
Now, who's the competitors for McAllister's?
Primary competitors would be Panera, Jason's Deli, and Nuke's would be probably the closest.
And then, is that a growing area right now? What is that category called?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's, you could call it deli, bakery kind of type of category. The overall, not specific to what we offer, would be fast casual.
Mm-hmm.
So quick service is one where you do not have table service at all. It's place your order, drive through, lower price points.
Right.
Casual dining is a more of a full service experience, like a Chili's or an Applebee's. Fast casual lands in between. It has been the fastest growing segment in food service. Within that, again, we would probably be in the deli segment. So sandwiches, salads for us, spuds, and then especially tea. We have very well-known and famous sweet tea and unsweet tea, so it's a great asset for us. So
now, do you have any pressure, sales pressure from the, it seems like all these kind of make it at home and they're ready-made meals that are already prepared? Is that affecting your business?
You know, I think that's been affecting the business for a long time. That I don't think that's a new trend. I mean, I know folks like Chick-fil-A in terms of having a meal kit.
I know they're
playing,
right, they're doing some of that. And now I'm seeing that at even like grocery stores.
I think it's a great idea for them. It's not a new idea. It's a new idea in terms of the format they're presenting it in. But grocery stores have been in that game for, you know, almost 10 years now. So I think in general,
I'm talking
in food
like
service,
the Blue Aprons and the HelloFreshes and things like that.
I think that's a different occasion, honestly. I don't see that, I don't have exact data. You know, does it impact us? Maybe. But I really see that as a whole different occasion where someone is trying to create an event and an occasion with their family or significant other in an at-home environment. Does that affect a choice to go out or not? Perhaps, but I don't see that as direct impact. Really, to answer your question, the more challenging piece is the amount of unit growth that has happened within the food service industry, period. And with the economic rebound, if you will, and we're on 10 years plus, there's been quite a proliferation in terms of options. That, in turn, I think has really spread the overall traffic or dollars, if you will. And so that is more of a challenge than call it meal kits or the like.
So now there's just more choices for the consumer?
Yes.
And just getting them to choose you?
Yes. And so there's a lot of small entrance. Barriers to entry are relatively low. So that does put more pressure on than anything. And I think, you know, who knows when an economic downturn will happen. I guess it's assumed that it will. At some point,
well,
there will be
cyclical.
An adjustment.
At some point, there
right?
will be.
I mean, although we're well past
right.
our number.
Cycle.
It's brands like ours that will benefit.
Right.
Because we're
brand.
We're well known. We're very strong economically at the unit level, at the brand level. That'll inevitably have some fallout. And that's not just for food service. That's retail in general.
Right.
That's the expectation. Having been at Cinnabon and dealing with mall operators, they're very much in that same mindset, if you will.
And is McAllister typically a standalone restaurant, or is it in a shopping center or in a mall?
It's both. I would say the lion's share of what we have would be at an end cap within a retail environment.
Mm-hmm.
But now, we do have standalone.
What about the food delivery businesses?
So that obviously is a big, big trend. Just the whole notion of on-the-go and convenience. I mean, you can rewind the tape back 10-plus years when drive-thru was spiking with QSR. It just continues to roll through in different models. So the third-party delivery services, Uber Eats, DoorDash, Grubhub are the three big ones.
So you have to make your meals travelable?
Yes. And the good news for us is our menu is highly portable as it stands. Half the menu or so is served at ambient temperatures. So, you know, temperature does not become as big of an issue for us. Obviously,
thin crust pizza.
Yeah, where it's a little bit
a little harder.
A little bit more challenging, yeah. And we are definitely participating in a big way. I would say 3/4 or more of our restaurants right now are participating with one or more of those services. And they represent a meaningful amount of business. It's not double digit, but it's meaningful. And to not participate in that is to walk away from a piece of business that's probably not coming back. It is definitely here to stay. You know, in what form, which player, what have you, that remains to be seen. But not only are we addressing that, but we're putting in things like on-the-go pickup stations to make it more accessible for people who are looking to have the food off-premise, pickup windows.
Do you have an app where I can order and then pick
up? We sure
do.
Yep. Order online and pick up. Like I said, providing more and more of those options, like putting in pickup windows, not drive-thrus, but pickup windows,
mm-hmm.
where you do a pre-order on the app or a call ahead and then swing through and pick it up. Our menu is a little bit more complex, and so therefore it doesn't lend itself as well to a pure drive-thru model. But we know that convenience and access is important to our guests, so we continue to develop and adjust our restaurants and even our new prototype that we opened in West Midtown this week to be more accessible for those types of occasions.
So talk about the new prototype. That's important to always be kind of testing and evolving the consumer experience, right?
Totally, yeah. I mean, in a hyper-competitive environment, making sure that you're top of mind and relevant, both from a look and feel as well as functionality within the restaurant, is important. Key elements to this, obviously, are things like I've already mentioned around on-the-go pickup stations and the pickup window, but also The look and feel of the restaurant has an updated color palette. We have a focus. We've always had a focus as a brand on community, and we basically double down on that in this new prototype where we have a community mural. So we have this is in West Midtown. So there's a mural that represents West Midtown and key symbols as it relates to the community there. We have a community wall where we're going to have photos from local community heroes. We did a community heroes dinner for the Atlanta Police Department, celebrating their partnership with Meals on Wheels, and even bringing in some digital in there. So you can do hashtag McAllister's West Midtown ATL, and that would allow you to have pictures posted within the restaurant. So developing that local feel and connection. But then also, in addition to the updated look and feel, community connection, and access, would be things like featuring our tea and merchandising. So having transparent tea urns and displaying that and merchandising it in a way that's, I guess, more appealing to our guests. So
now, how do you balance the change that you have to always be pushing the envelope and change, and also satisfying the franchisee who has invested so much money, and any change impacts them that they're going to have to make similar changes?
Yes, so we're very attuned to franchisee profitability. Look, any healthy franchise or franchise, I should say, that you're talking to has a focus on unit-level economics and franchisee profitability. So fortunately for us, we're starting from a very good place. But as it relates to the new prototype, you know, we're first proving the point in terms of building the business case around it. You know, for things that are not what I would call sales drivers, we're trying to be cost neutral or better.
Mm-hmm.
Things like beverage merchandising, things like a pickup window are incremental costs, but they also deliver incremental benefit, whether that be with drink incidents, which is a highly profitable piece of our business, or with pickup window where, you know, we see a significant increase in off-premise sales. Those things arguably pay for themselves. So being sensitive to that, and then also, you know, when people make those investments and how we roll it out is something we keep a close eye on as well, obviously starting with the older restaurants first and then moving forward from there.
Now, for you, has there been a big learning curve going from a Cinnabon that's kind of a dessert-y occasion to this more multiple occasion business?
Yes and no. I was with Yum Brands and with KFC, which was more of a center of the plate concept, so it's not completely unfamiliar to me. This would be my first job in fast casual, as I described it earlier. But you know, being within the focus brands building and focus brands being a portfolio company, knowing the folks in the building in finance, HR, creative, makes the transition quite a bit easier. It's moving across the floor, familiar with the brand. So, but yes, there are certain things in terms of nuances of being street side, the parts of the country where we're concentrated in, that level of frequency and volume is much, much higher at McAllister. So there definitely are things, but to answer your question directly, it's not as big of a transition as you might think.
Now, any tips for new CEOs going into a new environment like this, even though it's familiar in some ways, it's still new. Any tips to kind of have an effective launch? Did you have a 100-day plan or a 90-day plan?
Yeah, I'm a big subscriber to, you know, the first 90 days, which is a book that I've referenced several times. And I think the biggest takeaway from that, and for any new CEO coming in, is really understanding the situation that you're coming into. So I've had four roles like this, from managing vending for Coca-Cola in the United States to KFC in the south of the U.S. to Cinnabon at a national level to McAllister's at a national level. And I will tell you, each one of those businesses was in a different place when I showed up. And understanding where the strengths are and what you can leverage and where you have to take action quickly, and your overall approach will differ pretty dramatically. You know, this business, of all the businesses I manage, is by far and away the healthiest. So it's more of how do you find and accelerate the strengths of that business versus stop the bleeding or have to make some more dramatic change where some business problems are more acute, such as franchisees going out of business or, you know, having serious issues related
to guests. So where there's some triage needed as opposed to let's just sell more.
Yeah, I think the greatest mistake one can make is to over-extrapolate the successes from your prior experience to your new experience without really truly taking stock. Probably one of the best examples that I've seen in my career was when Neville Isdell came into Coca-Cola, and he truly took 90 days going around the world, talking to all kinds of constituents to really understand where it needed to go. And this is a man who'd spent 30 plus years at the company, so it wasn't exactly a newbie. And so I think that is probably the most important takeaway that I would give to anybody.
So you went around and kind of went on a listening tour just to hear.
I did go on a bit of a bender. I've been to 14 states and 80 restaurants. I've met with the majority of the franchisees. Fortunately for us, that's a relatively short list. It's less than 50 for us.
Because they all own multiple units?
Mostly. Not all, but mostly, yes. And I would tell you that 70%+ of our business is with less than 10 franchisees. So it's highly concentrated. So that makes it easier to get around to, but yes, spending a lot of time in restaurants and spending time with frontline employees and managers, understanding what their challenges are, because that's where it all happens, right? It doesn't happen at headquarters. We're all
where you come up with a good idea and tell them what to do. And they
exactly.
Just jump
that's
on it.
That's generally not a good way to go about things, especially in this business.
So now, anything on that kind of listening tour that you're going to be able to implement and put into play? Anything that surprised you?
You know, yes and no. I mean, I think one of the favorite questions I like to do is when I get with the general manager, who is kind of the pinch point, if you will, of our industry, right? Where the rubber meets the proverbial road is what's the best thing about McAllister's? What's the toughest thing about McAllister's? And interestingly enough, the answer to both questions was the same. And it was people.
The talent?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it was, what was the best thing? I love my staff. I love my guests. I love management. I love who I work for. But then the flip side was also true. What's the toughest part? Well, keeping enough people. So, and we were talking about labor earlier and talent. That's a big, big challenge right now out there, especially for our industry. Managing that, making sure people showing up, having enough people is a big challenge.
So how, as the franchisor, do you help impact them at a local level?
You know, I think that's it's a bit challenging because we are a separate organization. We don't hire those folks as franchisee. As a franchisor, what I find is the best way to address it, and it's not an immediate take, but there's two things. One is make sure you're bringing in great franchisees, because that's where it starts. Great team members work for great managers work for great franchisees. So pick the right franchisees, and the rest will follow. So that's one. On a broader basis is, continuing to, if you look at you talk about the new prototype, thinking about the restaurant environment, what are you providing? So there are simple things like the T-shirts that they wear. Well, we went ahead and spent an extra dollar and bought a nicer T-shirt.
Right.
And it had nicer material, had a little bit more of kitschy sayings. You know when team members are saying, hey, can I get one of those to wear home? Or they're wearing the T-shirt in to the restaurant, so they're being seen in public when they're not behind the counter. That's a good sign. And so those are simple things that we try to do, is make that restaurant environment more appealing to the team member, because you're just going to spend 40, 50 hours a week in that environment. So that comes back to the prototype and making sure you're being up to date and making that more relevant, because not only is it more relevant for your guests, but more importantly, it's more relevant for your team members.
And I would think in your model, with the franchisees owning multiple ones, they have to hire well, because some of those people are going to be managing the next location, right?
That's exactly true. And some of our best franchisees, I was with one this morning at the new prototype, our largest franchisee. He was very anxious to come in and see the new look. And good news for us, he really liked what he saw. But they do a fantastic job at managing people. It just goes back to the premise. You get those great franchisees. They know how to hire and retain great people, and those great people deliver great guest experiences. And that is what really matters today. It's not the new ad campaign, and it's not that media and advertising isn't important, and that's obviously rapidly evolving with social and digital, but it's the guest experience you deliver on. because it doesn't matter what ad campaign or deal you run.
No matter how clever your tagline is, if the food's no good or you don't have a good
exactly,
not coming back.
Totally. And we put a lot of value on genuine hospitality and guest experience. And we've recently embarked on a new endeavor to try to double down on that. We do have good guest satisfaction scores, but they can always be better.
Sure.
And there are always people who are higher, so we aspire to that.
Now, how do you kind of do some surprise and delight things? Like, what are some ideas that you guys have been kicking around?
You know, for us, we call it a little something extra, or an LSE, and really putting a focus on that. So it can be as small as just getting people drink refills. So, you know, I should mention as fast casual, there's some variation in there. We do deliver the food to your table.
Mm-hmm.
We bus your plates. You're not eating on paper. You actually have silverware. There, you'd be amazed how many people actually appreciate the fact that they're using actual silverware. But it has that. It's a fast casual by definition, but it has that casual dining feel. And in many of our units are in smaller towns, and that makes a big difference. Refilling people's drink and asking them to top off their tea, bringing them the high chair when they're juggling a child.
Because these are human-to-human interactions.
They are.
So these are opportunities to really bond with your guest and to really do something that stands out.
Exactly. And so, you know, we have a high level of frequency from a lot of regular guests. And so knowing their name, knowing their order, I've been in restaurants where people are plugging in the order the minute the guest walks in the restaurant. Having that high level of familiarity obviously matters. Recognition of birthdays, you know, giving someone a free cookie. We have excellent cookies, and, you know, just giving that away maybe costs us 15, 20 cents.
Right.
But it's amazing to see people just light up like that. I will say one other thing about the brand that we are looking to go deeper on is I have noticed that in my tour that we do employ broadly as a system a lot of people with special needs. And so... you know, and they honestly, no one lights up a dining room like some of these folks. We have a gentleman, TJ, that's in our Brandon store in Jackson, Mississippi, and he's worked for us for 4 years. And the guest service and the attentiveness that they deliver is just outstanding. And I think that's an opportunity for us as a brand to be more intentional in that. Our franchisees are fantastic about it. We employ quite a few. But that's something I think we can probably continue to push on.
Right. You can make that part of the culture.
And part about the communities we serve. And so back to the notion of focus on community and designing the restaurant to reflect the communities we serve, there's more to be had in that regard for us. It's a natural part of our brand. It's a natural extension of our roots. And that's something we're going to continue to look at.
Now, for you, you mentioned a need for more franchisees and people to raise their hand to say, hey, let me consider McAllister's as part of my investment, my investments. So you're looking for people. You mentioned a lot of them have come organically through the franchise, but you're looking for maybe somebody who has an existing franchise or several units of something else to
or at least the experience, if not currently. So we definitely have talked to people who have exited one brand and are looking for the next
another
thing.
Opportunity.
Yeah. So it's not a requirement that you have other units, but certainly having had that experience is valuable.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way to learn more about McAllister's?
I believe you can go to the website McAllistersDeli.com, and then there'll be a section under franchising under there. If you want to get in touch with us directly about an opportunity at McAllister's.
Good stuff. Well, Joe, thank you so much for sharing your story.
I appreciate it. Thanks, Lee.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.